Good evening, gentle beings. We here at Tuesday Terror Productions would like to remind you that while the stories presented here are a tribute to the magnificent universe that Scott Sigler has created, they do not actually have any effect on it. We openly encourage our authors to create what-if scenarios of things that could, but do not necessarily occur in the Siglerverse. None of these are canon. We would not have the gall to even attempt counterfeiting Pope Siglericus XXX's blessing of genuine Sigler content, which graces all of Scott's stories. We cower in fear of General Siglerissimo's wrath. Please keep this in mind as you listen to these stories. While shocking things may happen to familiar characters, races, ships, or planets on Tuesday Terror, they are safe and sound, with Scott back in your beloved Siglerverse. Thank you for your time. Now on with the show.
This episode is brought to you by the MooseJaw.com coupon code SCOTT, which saves you 15% off full-priced items and 10% off of sale items.
If you're into outdoorsy stuff like climbing,
hiking,
camping,
biking,
you can get your clothes, shoes, and gear at MooseJaw.com. They have all the best brands like
Marmon,
Billabong,
DC,
686,
Camelback,
Black Diamond,
and more.
Get all your outdoorsy stuff at low prices, and when you check out, save more by using the custom code SCOTT.
That's S-C-O-T-T. Some restrictions apply. And now, on with our story.
Welcome to Tuesday Terror, an anthology of stories written by junkies and based in the Siglerverse. This podcast is for mature audiences only. It contains foul language, adult situations, and prolific graphic violence. If you're easily offended, you should not listen any further.
G'day, my fellow junkies. Welcome back to Tuesday Terror, the fan-generated anthology based in the Siglerverse. Here's where you'll hear stories from your fellow junkies who've been inspired to create tales of their own based on and or around those Scott has told us. In Scott Sigler's novel, The Rookie, Quentin Barnes discovers that his fellow quarterback, Donald Pine, is deliberately tanking games to pay off his gambling debt to Mopook the Sneaky, owner of the Bootleg Arms. Quentin leads the Krakens in an effort to pay off Pine's debt. After all is said and done, Mopook and his organization are thoroughly decimated. Loyalty is written by Renee Jordan, edited and performed by Ariok Morningstar. It is an alternative future history of the Rookie. Renee is one of Scott's invaluable secret agents. Scott uses his secret agents as fiction consultants to ensure that he is never wrong in their field of expertise. Renee is a veteran of the United States Army who provides our beloved FDO with accurate descriptions of military firearms, vehicles, and aircraft. She also assisted Scott tremendously with her specialized knowledge of chemical, biological, radiation, and nuclear warfare equipment and techniques. Renee has already earned a permanent place in the Siglerverse in The Crypt, Shakedown, Part 2. She is also quite active in the ScottSigler.com forums. Her handle there is Perfect Day for Dying, or PDFD, as those of us who are lazy typists refer to her as. Now settle in, relax, and enjoy today's Tuesday Terror Tale. Loyalty by Renee Jordan. Quentin Barnes stepped through the doorway to his apartment, followed by Missal the Efficient and a 3-foot-tall, blue and chrome humanoid robot. All three had their arms full of packages and bags, loot from Quentin's 20th birthday party. The Tier 1 season had gone well for the Krakens, and while they didn't take the championship, Greedock the Splithead had seemed pleased with an overall ranking of 3rd in the conference. So pleased, in fact, that he footed the bill for an invitation-only gala birthday celebration at his newest nightclub, the Big Eye. Of course, the Big Eye is also the ubiquitous nickname for Ionath Stadium. After Mopook the Sneaky's untimely death, Greedock acquired his club, the Bootleg Arms. While the Arms was a popular club, Mopook had been strictly low rent. The cheap little bastard skimped on everything, from watering down the booze to substandard electrical work and a cobbled-together sound system whose only saving grace was the luck of having good room acoustics. Halfway through the Tier 1 season, Greedock had the place closed, gutted, and remodeled. He saw a lot of potential in the space, not only to attract locals as the Bootleg Arms had done, but also tourists. Once all the construction was done, the Big Eye looked like a cross between an upscale dance club and a Kraken-specific sports bar. Kraken's memorabilia, along with gleaming medals and rare woods, or at least what looked like rare woods, were everywhere. The main bar was actually three bars. One section was 2 feet tall to accommodate Quith leaders and workers, in addition to Sklorno males. Then the bar rose to 4 feet for human, Ki, and Quith warriors. The final section was 6 feet high, a comfortable height for Sklorno females. A state-of-the-art sound and holo system was able to project up to 20 different games at once, or, if it was a Kraken's game day, one game on 20 different holo tanks. The party had been huge. Drink flowed, and all the beautiful and important people were there. Quinton Barnes sat right in the middle of it. All night, people had come up to him offering birthday best wishes and congratulations on a well-played season. He sighed happily with the memory, then wobbled a bit as he dropped his load of bags and boxes onto the sofa that sat in the middle of his living room. The apartment was fairly small by most standards. 2 bedrooms with a small kitchen and a living room, but it was more personal space than Quinton had ever known, so he never considered looking for a bigger place.
"Where would you like me to put these, sir?"
Masal tried to keep his precariously balanced load from tumbling to the floor. Quinton blinked a few times, clearing his vision. He had drunk too much. Not way too much, as he sued Murphy and John Twitty had done. No surprise there. But he was still drunk enough that Greedock had insisted Masal escort him home. Quinton figured that as long as he was coming along, Masal may as well carry some of his gifts home for him. The rest would be sent over from the club tomorrow.
"Just set everything down there," Quinton said, pointing to the unused bedroom. "Robot, follow him."
The android had actually been a gift itself, though he couldn't remember who it was from. It was really just a fancy media player that could follow you around, play audio or project holo, dance, and apparently carry things for you. It had a limited artificial intelligence and could even act as a personal phone, and give you access to the Galactic Net as long as you purchased the optional data connectivity plan from Earth Ansible and Messenger, which was horribly overpriced and generally regarded as too slow. Quinton hadn't gotten around to naming it yet, so he just called it Robot. One of the bags that Quinton had set on the sofa tipped over, and an orange and black plastic hat with a series of flexible tubes and magna can holders on both sides tumbled out. The beer hat was one of football's oldest and most enduring traditions, and the gift had come from two of the Kraken's most notorious drinkers, Yasud Murphy and John Tweedy. Quinton grinned a bit as he picked up the hat and examined it. Sure, it was silly and relatively useless, but Quinton wasn't used to getting gifts on his birthday, or even celebrating it for that matter, so the hat held great sentimental value. Besides, it was genuine Kraken's licensed gear. Considering Quinton's skills and the rising popularity of the Kraken's franchise, this baby would probably be worth some serious credits someday. The birthday party, the first one Quinton had ever had, was almost 6 weeks late. He had turned 20 late in the middle of the season, and there simply hadn't been enough time to celebrate until now. It was worth the wait, though. Greedock had combined the grand opening of the Big Eye with a proper postseason celebration befitting a successful Tier 1 team and Quinton's 20th birthday party. Maybe Greedock hadn't gone all out just for Quinton after all, since he was going to be throwing a party that night one way or the other. Greedy hadn't become as successful in the mob as he had without knowing how to take care of business, and killing 3 birds with 1 stone was very good business indeed. Quinton sat on the sofa next to the pile of gifts, flopping a bit as his knees gave out with an inebriated quiver. He rummaged through the pile, pulling out a huge platinum belt buckle given to him by fullback Tom Perilous. Perilous was from Texas.
Texas, damn it, not Earth!
And apparently the huge buckle was a Texas thing. The box from Carlos Machida, the Kraken's rookie running back, caught his eye. It was a working replica of an ancient Earth gaming console called an Xbox 360. Carlos was a good guy, and he and Quinton had played a few holo games together during the season to unwind after practice. He was always talking about how football had run in his family for the last 700 years. He even had some crazy story about an ancestor of his, some guy named Jerry Doughty or something like that, who had actually stopped an alien invasion of Earth way back in the early 21st century. Quinton thought it sounded like something from a bad science fiction novel, so he never paid the story much attention. Virak the Mean had given him a collapsible stun stick. With the flick of a wrist, it could extend from 6 inches to an 18-inch long dense steel baton with a stunner tip you could adjust up to 3 million volts. Back in the Purist Nation, Quentin only had to worry about other humans messing with him, and he could always handle his own in any fight. Out in the rest of the galaxy, though, it never hurt to have a little backup, as Vyrek had told him after showing him how to use the weapon. Masal shuffled from the spare bedroom, leaving the automaton to arrange things.
Will there be anything else, Mr. Barnes?
The room did a brief wavy thing in front of Quentin's eyes.
No, that's it. Thanks, Masal.
My pleasure, sir.
Masal started to turn toward the door when Quentin grunted a bit as he labored to sit up, ending up supporting himself with his elbows on his knees.
No, I mean, you do a lot for the team, man, and no one ever thanks you.
He was trying not to sound too drunk, though it was a losing battle.
Some thanks, thank you, Masal. This team wouldn't run as well without you.
Thank you, sir.
Masal beamed with genuine pride. His large eye took on a bright shade of happy orange.
It is always good to know that my service is appreciated. Will there be anything else, sir?
Nah, you have a good night, Masal.
The slack grin of a drunk, happy man still clung to the corners of Quentin's mouth.
You as well, Mr. Barnes.
Masal bowed, then turned and walked out. Quentin sat back, slumping a bit on the sofa, and his right hand landed on a hollow chip. He thumbed the button and watched as the ad for a snow skiing vacation package in the Wyoga mountain range on Baker 6 played in front of him. Yotaro Kobayashi had gotten it for him, though he couldn't imagine what possessed the man to get it. Quentin had never even seen snow, much less gone skiing, and those mountains didn't look like they'd be too friendly to beginners. Where was that damn droid?
Hey, robot!
The media bot scurried out of the bedroom and stood in front of Quentin. It was a simple affair. A bit boxy with two legs, two arms with fully articulated four-fingered hands, trimmed out in chrome and metallic blue. The head looked like a smaller box on top of the bigger box that was the android's main body. Its only purpose seemed to be to give a space to mount the two cameras that served as the automaton's eyes and the two acoustic sensors that acted as ears.
Yes, sir. How may I entertain you?
Stewart's undies. The damn thing sounded like a little kid. Quentin would have to see about changing that setting. It was just too creepy. Maybe he could make it sound like Greedock. Wouldn't that be a hoot? On second thought, maybe not. Quentin could imagine Greedock's displeasure at finding out that a little robot which sounded just like him was being ordered around by his star quarterback.
Give me a bottle of water from the fridge.
Quentin gestured with his thumb toward the small kitchen behind him.
I'm sorry, I do not know the location of that item.
Damn Mackensoft crap. Never smart enough to do just what you wanted it to do. Quentin would apparently have to teach it where everything was, but he wasn't doing that tonight. He hoisted himself up from the sofa and looked down on the small android.
Never mind, just power off.
The media bot's display panel turned off and the small red power indicator light on the top of his head went dark. Quentin went to the kitchen and downed a big glass of water, then stumbled to his bedroom. He flopped down on the bed and immediately passed out flat on his back, not even bothering to pull the blanket over him. Two hours after Quentin had shut the little droid down and gone to bed, the power light on top of its head glowed to light. The bot did nothing for several minutes. It just sat there, listening. Its acoustic sensors detected the gentle sounds of deep sleep breathing coming from the bedroom. One of the automaton's features was its ability to track a sound to its source the same way a Moolah Hill's hound dog could track scent. It did just that, using the time differential between when the sound was detected by the two sensors on either side of its head to determine what direction the noise was coming from. The android walked quietly down the short hallway and into Quentin's dark bedroom. The lack of lighting didn't matter to the robot, as its high-definition visual processors had built-in light amplification. Quentin was sprawled across one side of the bed, his right arm dangling off the edge, his breathing a slow, regular cadence. The bot approached the bed and stood right next to his head, waiting for the next command from its new master. After a few moments, that command came. It could see everything in much sharper clarity than the human eye was capable of achieving, despite the lack of direct light. It could see individual follicles along Quentin's hairline, and it could count each pore on his face. The android had no trouble detecting the pulsing of skin on Quentin's neck that showed where his carotid artery was at its shallowest. Even in a deep, alcohol-induced sleep, Quentin's pulse was strong and regular. The automaton raised its right arm until it was pointing at Quentin's neck, the curled fingers only an inch away from making contact. A small panel on the forearm opened, and a tiny hypodermic needle emerged, attached to the end of a three-jointed armature. The mechanism moved the needle until it was hovering just over the pulsing spot of skin. A small spray nozzle built into the end of the armature spritzed the spot with a fast-acting topical anesthetic. Quentin didn't move. His breathing didn't change. After 15 seconds, the needle moved forward smoothly, penetrating the flesh and stopping right in the middle of the carotid artery. Less than 1 milliliter of a highly potent neurotoxin was injected into the artery. As the needle was extracted, it left a few hundred nanosites behind to seal the puncture. The armature retracted, pulling the needle back into the compartment on the forearm. Within a few seconds, Quentin's steady breathing stopped. The rhythmic pulsing on his neck also ceased. There were no dramatic spasms as Quentin entered death. No gasping, gurgling, or bugged-out eyes. He simply stopped living. Quentin didn't even know that he was being murdered. The droid took several steps back, until it was only inches from the wall. The power light on top of its head went dark once more. Tikad the Groveling's pedipalps quivered blindingly, and his large single eyes swirled black, red, and orange, the colors of hate, rage, and joy. He watched the screen that showed the feed from the robot's camera eyes intently, seeing Quentin's breathing slow, then stop. He managed to control his pedipalps long enough to guide the robot back a few steps. Then he sent the command to power off. Everything would have been fine if Barnes had simply done as Mopook the Sneaky had instructed, but Barnes hadn't done as Mopook had instructed, and it ended up costing Tikad Shamakoth his life. The cowardly Quith worker had thought of nothing but revenge since that day. The droid had been easy enough. The Mackensoft iZune MediaBot was commercially available and easy enough to modify for his needs. Tikad had always been rather clever, and adding the remote control module and the needle had been easier than he'd anticipated. The poison was difficult to come by, but you didn't work for a mobster like Mopook the Sneaky for years without picking up a few contacts along the way. It was extracted from the glands of the Skrarlak, a 3-foot-long, lizard-like creature native to planet Quith. It was known to be able to fell 1,000-pound predators in seconds, and in far smaller doses than Quentin had received. Getting the robot into the party had required paying off one of the humans on the security staff to let him in the back door. After that, he had simply placed the automaton with the growing pile of gifts that had been coming in for Quentin all day, then snuck out the same way he'd come in. Tikad had not been invited to continue working for Greedock after the bootleg arms was closed, which only added to his sense of betrayal. Everyone underestimated him. No one appreciated him. No one except Mopook. Sure, to an outsider it appeared that Mopook just barely tolerated him, but Tikad knew different. Every time Mopook had knocked him across the room or had one of his enforcers rough him up for some minor infraction, Tikad reminded himself that if he'd wanted, Mopook could have simply had him killed. Tikad's logic told him that since Mopook hadn't had him killed, that could only mean that he truly appreciated his service and loyalty. Loyalty. No one else in Mopook's organization really understood what that meant. Well, no one still alive after Quentin and his teammates had slaughtered 4 of Mopook's best bodyguards, anyways. After word filtered throughout the underworld that Greedock knew about Mopook's game-fixing, they'd all cut and run. Even Mopook's Kredorakian messenger Sobox had gotten himself off-planet within a matter of hours. He'd been helpful in obtaining the Skrarlak venom, but he didn't want to know what its intended use was. Sobox warned Tikad that if he intended to go after Greedock or anyone associated with him, he was on his own. Well, Tikad, coward that he was, simply couldn't let this one go. Quentin Barnes was the reason his Shamakoth was dead, and Barnes had to pay. And he had. Tikad had done it. Mopook always said that,
"If someone comes after you with a knife, you go after them with a gun. If someone puts one of your boys in the hospital, you put one of theirs in the morgue."
It was a line that had picked up from some ancient Earth story about organized crime. But it sounded tough, so Mopook used it frequently. Tikad had taken that wisdom to heart. It motivated him to pursue the ultimate vengeance for Barnes' insubordination. Tikad's petty palps began quivering uncontrollably again as he reveled in his success, absolutely confident that the heinous act could never be traced back to him.
From the Ionoth City Gazette, Kraken's quarterback found dead in apartment. Authorities suspect foul play. By Pilar the Quick-Fingered.
Quentin Barnes, starting quarterback for the Ionoth Krakens, was found dead in his apartment in Ionoth City today. Officials are conducting an investigation and have indicated that a preliminary toxicology report suggests foul play was involved. Krakens' team owner, Greedock the Splithead, held a brief press conference in which he stated,
"We are all stunned at the untimely death of such a talented football player. Kraken's fans can rest assured that I and my organization will do everything within our power to assist in the investigation and bring the responsible party to justice. Everything.
We here at the Ionoth Gazette will deliver the latest information regarding the sudden and unexpected demise of Kraken's starting quarterback Quentin Barnes to our readers as it becomes available."
Well, that's all the story content I have for you this episode. Tuesday Terror number 4 will feature the conclusion of Loyalty. It'd be awesome if you would leave me your opinion of having longer stories featured here on Tuesday Terror. Just post a comment on the blog and let me know what you think. Positive or negative, either one is better than silence. For details on how to submit your story, please visit scottsigler.com/Tuesday Terror submissions. I'll have the conclusion to Loyalty for you in a couple weeks.
Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this episode of Tuesday Terror. Produced by Morningstar Studios in conjunction with Dark Overlord Media. Music courtesy of the band Separation of Sanity. Check them out at reverbnation.com/separationofsanity. For more information on the Siglerverse, please visit scottsigler.com.